Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 108. Thank you for joining us today, and welcome to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Once again, I'm Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. And Rob serves as an elder here at Westminster as well, and is an MDiv student at Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando. Rob, welcome to another episode of Theology Simply Profound.
I always like it when you welcome me to the podcast.
To our own podcast.
You know that I'm part of
it. What's it?
Theology Simply Profound, that I'm actually part of the podcast.
You're a guest, just a special guest all the time, over and over again.
You always seem to introduce me.
Well, I don't have to. It'll just be my show.
Well, that's kind of where I see it going. That this is.
All right. Well, actually, what we do have is a guest.
We do have a special guest.
We have a guest.
I'm saying special guest. He's a special guest.
Yes, especially to you, because you have been familiar with him for a very long time now. And without any more ado, we will just say who he is. His name is Ken Jones. I'll let you do the continuing introduction, because you know of him much more. That's why he is our special guest. Go ahead, Rob.
Dr. Jones. See, I would go with Dr. Jones all the time, by the way. I'd have to have. But yeah, Ken Jones is with us. Thank you for joining us today. We're very happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. And I'm actually an orderly. I'm not a doctor.
So. Oh, okay.
I appreciate it.
So you're almost a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, Ken Jones, for a long time, almost 20 years, I believe, was one of the four radio horsemen of the White Horse Inn, a show that I grew up on. When I say grew up, I meant grew up Reformed on. Of course, I became Reformed in my early 20s, and the White Horse Inn was one of the staple programs that was just so refreshing. Really helped my wife and I both when we became Reformed. We could go to Scripture and see it anew, and the White Horse Inn helped do that. So for the White Horse Inn for us, as we were reading the scriptures, and of course, when we became Reformed, it gave us a better understanding of all of Scripture. And so as we were reading it, we both had gone to Bible college. And as we were reading it, it was like seeing it anew. And so the White Horse Inn was able to bring out aspects of covenant theology, or just theology. And we could see Christ in all of Scripture, which was incredible for us.
Amen. That's a great testimony. Like you said, I was on the program for about 20 years, and over the years, since I've been off, I still get emails and phone calls of people that were impacted by what we did over those years. So it's great to hear that. That's all we were doing, is just discussing our understanding of the gospel among four guys who had enough things in common that even though our faith traditions were, or our communions were slightly different in terms of our denominational affiliation, our commitment to the gospel is what brought us together. And it's great to hear and see the fruit of all of those many conversations.
Yeah, that's great. So what are you doing now?
Well, I am a pastor here in Miami, and I've been here since 2010 at Glendale Baptist Church. And over the last, I guess about a year and a half now, I've been involved with a local radio program with three other local pastors in the Miami area called Saints and Sinners Unplugged. It's also available on a podcast, and it's very much in the vein of White Horse Inn, especially early days, where we unpack various aspects of the doctrines of grace. But mostly I've been focusing my attention here locally.
Yeah, well, that's great. If people were in Miami and they wanted to come to your church, where in Miami is it located?
Well, we're in I guess technically it would be called the Kendall area. We're at 117th Avenue and 152nd Street, I think is what it is. But it's right off the Turnpike. We are south of downtown Miami and north of the Homestead area. So it's right off the Turnpike, very easy to find. And the church has been here since, well, in this particular location, I'm not sure how long, but the church itself will be celebrating its 55th anniversary in the month of April.
Okay. Wow.
Wonderful.
Great. Yeah.
So I was actually always curious. This brings me back just a little bit here. How did the White Horse Inn get started with the as you called it, the four horsemen of the radio? did one of the guys just give you a call one day, or were you getting together already doing something else? Or I'm just curious.
Well, actually, it started under the umbrella of an organization that was headed up by Michael Horton, Dr. Michael Horton, who teaches down at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California. Mm-hmm. Mike started an organization called CURE, which was an acronym for Christians United for Reformation. We never figured out anything for the E, but it was Christians United for Reformation. He started, I believe, when he was still a college student at Biola. Hmm. And it was a series of things. It was sort of a Christian think tank. And the White Horse Inn radio program was just one of the avenues, one of the mediums or medias that was used by CURE. And it consisted of he and Kim Riddlebarger. They had mm-hmm. been friends for a while, and both of them had taken a class with Rod Rosenblatt. And as a matter of fact, I think Kim first had a class with Rod, and then he told Mike about Rod. So Mike took a class with him, and they started the program. They named it after supposedly a pub in England mm-hmm. where people who came from during the period of the Reformation on the continent came and brought the theology they had gleaned from the continent to England, the English-speaking world, for the first time. And it wasn't a pub. We're not sure which White Horse Inn, but it was a pub called the White Horse Inn. So that's where they got the name. And eventually, with CURE, those three started the radio program. And as a matter of fact, I was on as a guest mm-hmm. probably around the time they celebrated the first anniversary. Hmm. And what happened was, so it was the three of them. Mike and Kim were Christian Reformed at the time, and Rod was Lutheran. And then eventually they brought me in, and I was they were coming up on their 1 year anniversary, and I think I filled in for Rod the first time I filled in. And then I was sort of a pinch hitter when Mike was working on his doctorate at Oxford, all while he was in England. I filled in for him. And then when Kim was finishing up his doctorate at Fuller, I filled in for him. So I was sort of a regular pinch hitter for a couple of years. And then after a while, they said, well, listen, why don't you just be the fourth host?
Well, it ended up becoming great. The four of you guys had a great chemistry together, and it was always so great to have the three traditions that were represented. And that way, when differences in doctrine could be talked about, there was somebody there who would actually say, well, yeah, this is what we believe, and this is how it's different, and this is how it's the same. And it fostered an understanding of what was the core to our Christianity that we can unite and be truly ecumenical about.
Yeah.
But also being able to say there are things within Christianity, or at least things that come into Christianity, that all of us agree need to be kept out.
Yeah. What we did, I mean, every now and then we would talk about some of our differences, specifically as it relates to the sacraments. But after a while, I mean, everyone knows that there are three different views there. Right. So after a while, it was no longer profitable to delve into those areas of difference. So we just chose to go with those things that we held in common. And only when it was necessary or germane to the conversation would we bring up our different views on various things. But I think one of the things that that made it such a profitable discussion is that, number one, with myself and with Mike and with Kim, mm-hmm. none of us started Reform. Mm-hmm. They right. ended up in a different camp of Reform theology than I did. Mm-hmm. But our beginnings in the faith were very similar. As a matter of fact, Mike, I believe he had some Baptist, Southern Baptist ties in his background. And Kim had other broadly evangelical dispensationalism in his background. So we grew out of different traditions, but those different traditions that we came out of were similar at that time. So we had a lot of commonality in terms of the journey into the doctrines of grace. And even with Rod, Rod had a phase where he went through a sort of a charismatic period before he landed more solidly in his Lutheran camp. So our journeys were similar in that none of us grew up historically Reformed.
Okay. Looking at evangelicalism today, what do you think is the most pressing problem or trajectory? What's your evaluation? Evangelicalism is kind of the hot topic right now.
Yeah. Boy, it's really hard to pin it down. I do think that there is a failure, for the most part, to grasp the substance of the gospel itself and its various implications. So in terms of what the gospel message is, and then how that plays itself out in the various doctrines of the faith. For instance, there seems to have been a trend over the last 10, 15 years or so towards people claiming to be Reformed. And I've often said this, especially when people who are Baptists, I said, you know, just because as a Baptist you discovered the sovereignty of God and the doctrine of election, that does not make you Reformed. To be Reformed is it's much more comprehensive than that. So I think one of the things that we've seen is people are throwing around terms, whether it's Reformed or whatever. But when you hear the content of much contemporary preaching, when you participate in much of contemporary worship, you see that it's disconnected from the substance of the gospel. So I think we have seen the trajectory towards more entertainment, more, well, as one of our guests on the White Horse Inn, Christian Smith, who interviewed a number of kids that were children of various religious stripes, just tracing the, tracking the religious thought of high schoolers, and then he followed them, I think, through the first or second year of college. But anyways, he and they were from all different religious traditions. And he said, regardless of the religious tradition they came from, they all pretty much sounded the same. And the way he described it is therapeutic, moralistic deism.
Yeah. Great analogy that he made.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're getting in many circles, many evangelical circles. Moralism is it becomes the message. The gospel is how to improve yourself. Therapeutic, because it helps you. It helps you feel better about yourself. And deistic, in that it claims some allegiance to this impersonal God, but it's not God as defined historically by our confessions and creeds, and certainly not not the Trinitarian God as understood in the New Testament. One of the things that my wife and I have observed is an absence of transcendence, in especially as it relates to worship. That everything is so disconnected from the otherness that is God, And I've argued in terms of worship, if we go back and look at the golden calf fiasco in the Old Testament, that, you know, in the book of Exodus, that speaks more to us than we realize, because what was the problem? It wasn't that they didn't just pick a cow out of random as the object of worship. They chose an object that corresponded to one of the many gods of Egypt. So in other words, they were trying to worship the right god, probably, through the means of the Egypt they had come from, where God had given them, with the tabernacle, God had given them the means to worship him. And what we read in the book of Hebrews is that the tabernacle and all of the trappings of the tabernacle were patterns of heavenly things. And so here's the challenge that we see throughout their 40 years of wandering, manifest really in the golden calf fiasco, that their worship either reflected the Egypt they had come from or the wilderness they were in, rather than the Canaan they were going to. And I think that's the challenge for contemporary Christians. We tend to worship God either according to the culture that we're presently in, or what we were in our fallen nature, or whether, you know, some other cultural aspect of our understanding of things. But it more reflects where we are rather than our heavenly citizenship. And I think the whole point of the Sabbath or the Lord's Day and the whole point of worship in earth is to reflect our present heavenly citizenship. So it is supposed to be a breaking in of the not yet into the right now. And that's what transcendence is. And I think what we see in a lot of contemporary worship is an effort to connect at our own emotional level to some sort of undefined spiritual reality apart from the means that connect us vertically to God.
Yeah, that's excellent. We know last week, actually, I did an interview with Dr. Michael Morales from Greenville Seminary in Greenville, South Carolina. And
yeah, no bike.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, and his book, He Who Shall Ascend the Mountain of the Lord, talks about Leviticus, and he makes the connection with Hebrews and worship, exactly what you're saying, which is really, really good, that God gives us a way to worship him. And in Leviticus, we're given that pattern of, here's how you're going to worship me now because of sin. And then there's that connection then in Hebrews that now that Christ has come, now you have a better access, a real access to the Father through the Son. But it's all connected with worship, all of it. And he takes it back to the garden where Adam and Eve are created to worship. And it is our sin that separates us. And now in evangelicalism, and I think it's because we've lost the understanding of sin in and of itself separating us from God. And now that we've become, or we are Christians, looking at it as now that we've been reconciled to God, that we're actually entering into the presence of a holy God.
Yeah, and that I agree. I think and not just the fact that we've entered into the presence of God, but Christ, the necessity of the mediator. So we are to receive the mediator on the terms in which he's been presented to us. And so there's much that's been conveyed to us in symbols and in but by virtue of understanding all of the promises of God and how all of this comes together in Christ. So I believe a failure to really appreciate Christ as our mediator that makes our worship acceptable to God, but also who enables us to worship the Father in spirit and in truth. One of my favorite quotes from John Owen is that there is an infinite ocean of love that is within God, but not one drop of it can reach us except through Christ. So all that is acceptable from us to God is mediated through Christ. and all that God has for us is mediated through Christ. So Christ, not just mentioning the name of Jesus, we don't just mention Jesus in our worship and just throw him around, as we used to say on the White Horse Inn, with some of, and not all praise songs are bad, but because some are very good.
Yes.
But there are some that just have this feel of Jesus as my boyfriend kind of stuff, rather than Jesus as my federal head, Jesus as my priest, Jesus as my sacrifice, Jesus as the one through whom I am able to offer acceptable worship to God. That's the transcendence that I think is missing.
Well, that's excellent points. You definitely need to write that book. We keep talking about you writing books.
And we're making more and more busy.
Yeah, you don't have enough to do, so we're going to give you some more.
The funny thing is, I've written blurbs for a lot of different books. I've got chapters in 3 different books, and I've got commitments to write like 3 or 4, which I've never done. So
oh, there you go. Then just add this one. Just add this one right in there. No problem. Well, it's. I mean, this has been a great conversation. I kind of hate to kind of steer away from it, but this our interview actually started with focusing on an organization called Rafiki, which does it takes care of widows and orphans in Africa, and actually takes the orphans and puts them into classical Christian education schools that are right there, and. Also gives the widows employment, and it's just a great organization. So I really wanted to highlight that, and I found out that you were on the board, and I thought,
well, no longer. I was on the board up until it's been a couple of years that I've moved away. Once I moved to Miami, I really had to get plugged in to where I was. It's a new congregation, getting to know people and dealing with various challenges. But I still have strong contact with Rafiki. I've written for them for their Bible study curriculum. And also, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be teaching for their enrichment later in the summer, in the month of July.
Oh, excellent.
So Karen still she's a very dear friend of myself and my wife.
Right. And that's who I had met at a conference. And so it was great conversations. And of course, then I go home to my wife, who is a classical principal, and I say, I found out about this great organization, Rafiki. And she says, oh yeah, I know about that. You know,
Rafiki Foundation, it started off under Rosemary Jensen. Rosemary was the director for Bible Study Fellowship for over 20 years. And Rosemary, her husband was a retired doctor. And years ago, back in the 60s, he opened a medical center in Kenya, I believe it was, or Tanzania. And Rosemary had a heart for Africa. She served there for a number of years. But in the late 80s, I believe it was, she founded the Rafiki Foundation, which was intended to be an orphanage. And eventually, they developed 10 villages in 10 different African countries. And it started just as an orphanage, primarily for children who had been left orphaned through the spread of AIDS and other things. Now, the children themselves were not infected, but many of them became orphaned because of the AIDS epidemic. But Rosemary established the Rafiki Foundation. Eventually, she left the Bible Study Fellowship and devoted her full attention to establishing those 10 villages. And I've had the privilege of being in every country where there is a Rafiki village. They went from just orphan care to providing curriculum and establishing schools, and also establishing a teacher's college. So as you mentioned, I did serve on the board for about 7 or 8 years. Rosemary and I also served on the council for the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. So we had a friendship already, and she encouraged me to go to the different countries, and we did pastors' conferences in most of the countries where we have a village.
Oh, that's great.
From the website, it says Rafiki means friend in Swahili and depicts the purpose of the foundation to befriend orphans and widows in their distress, James 1:27. The mission of the Rafiki Foundation is to help Africans know God and raise their standard of living with excellence and integrity. And that's a wonderful statement of faith, or not statement of faith, but more of a goal with regard to what is happening through the Rafiki Foundation. And when these schools are established, when the university is established, is it is there a confessional basis? Is there a reformed understanding? You mentioned Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals as associations that you guys were a part of who were in it. So I was just curious, is there a desire to bring the Reformed faith into these as classrooms, or is it just more general than that?
Well, that's a very good question. What we have tried to do is partner with churches in each country.
Okay.
And we try to focus on denominations that are committed to whatever degree to Reformed theology, which was one of the things that we were able to affirm through the pastors' conferences that we did, probably about a span of about 6 or 7 years. So we try to partner with churches that are, if they're not formally Reformed. For instance, in Tanzania, we work with the Lutheran Church. In Uganda, it was the Anglican Church, or the Church of Uganda. In Kenya, it was a group of Baptist churches and I think Presbyterian churches as well. So, the churches that we partner with in each country, whether they are consciously committed to Reformed confessions or traditions, or whether they are open to them, we that's where our point of theological cohesion comes in. And then in terms of the teaching, we have a curriculum that's taught. It's a Bible study that's provided, Bible study curriculum that's provided for each village. And those lessons, which are specifically for the African countries, are written by Reformed teachers and theologians here in the States. I've written some. David Wells from Gordon Conwell is the editor. And I think he's written some as well. I know Dennis Johnson from Westminster, California. I think he's written some. So they use material from Reformed theologians here in the States to teach to the staff, as well as establish the Bible studies for each of the homes.
Okay, can you walk us through the Rafiki Village with like how it works with the? I know it takes on widows and orphans. What does it look like?
Oh, it's people can go to the website. I don't know if I could fully describe what it looks like, but I'll say this: I can tell you that number one, it's land that's been donated by the host country. That's one of the things that we wanted to make sure of, that we were in partnership with the government and the tribes. So, because in Africa, even though you have government allocation of land and so forth, technically the land still is various territories are governed by each tribe. So we have to have tribal approval as well as government approval for the land. And the land, it's I don't know how many acres, but these are good pieces of land. And each village is walled in. It's a separate community. There's the famous Rafiki Gate, where we have our own logo on it, and it's a guard. So these the villages are walled in, and there's a series of bungalows. Technically, I think we're supposed to we design each village, and our architect is here from the state of Illinois, actually, the one who designed most of the villages for us. And I think it was supposed to be 10 cottages for the children. And then we have a recreation room. Now we have schools on site. And so it's walled in, and it's very nice. When I was in Uganda on one trip, we actually went to a state-run orphanage, and the difference was night and day. So the quality of living within the village, within the Rafiki village, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. The quality of living within a Rafiki village is going to be much greater than the villages that surround it. But we make sure that there's continued contact with the village and the surrounding villages.
Well, one thing that I was very interested in, I mean, everything I was hearing about Rafiki, it was amazing because everything was just great. How it was being run and what they were doing for the widows and orphans and how they were being taken care of. And one of the things that, of course, piqued my interest was that they put in classical education for the schools.
Yes. Yes.
In the States, classical education is still, even though it's growing, but people still kind of look at that as, oh, that's elitist. That's where you put, you know, the privileged children go to, which, of course, we know is not correct. And my wife and I have tried to educate people that this is for every child. But why was that the educational system that they used, and how effective has it been?
Well, it's fairly recent that it is taken the stronghold that it has within our villages. But I'm going to go back at least 10 years or so that we started laying the foundation for it. We worked with some people who were involved in classical education here in the States, developed a good curriculum. And it's I just think that it begins with where people are, so that it's not just geared towards a particular culture. It's if you use that model properly, it's easily adaptable to different cultures. I think that's one of the things that makes it so accessible. And yeah. Karen Elliott, who is now the director of Rafiki, before she became the director in Rosemary's Place, she was more or less Rosemary's right-hand person, but she was very much committed to the educational component. And she worked on it for years and instituted it, beginning with our home office and then branching out into the villages, so that the teachers that we were sending out were already trained in the classical curriculum, and it was an easier transition. And then we started teaching the teachers in each of the villages, the natives, the villages. Yeah, they were trained in the classical curriculum. So it's just been an easy transition, I think, because, like I said, it's adaptable to any given culture.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's foundational on how people think. Mm-hmm. That is universal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So I know that one of the things that Karen was talking about was a teacher's college that they're starting. How far along is that?
Karen was just with us back in December, and I was getting a little more information on it. We talk we talk periodically, but by me no longer being on the board, I don't know the full progress, but I know in two countries, they were pretty much almost up and ready to go. I don't recall offhand which countries they were.
Yeah, that's fine. They are going to be doing a teacher's college in each country.
Yes.
Oh,
that's
excellent. Okay.
That's the goal.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah. So then, and I know what Karen was saying, that any of the children that were interested in being teachers then, that they would just have a great place to go and have that kind of training. They can go right back into the schools.
Yeah, that would be great. As a matter of fact, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've had our first group of graduates from just the regular primary and high school and are ready for college. So it'll be interesting to see how many of them are able to either come back to Rafiki or in their surrounding village. And that's the goal, really, is to prepare them to return to their community and make various contributions, whether it's teaching, government, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Ken, how is a organization like this funded for the work that they do? You mentioned donation of the by the local government or the national government for the land. Does the government involved in the funding of it beyond that, or is it private donations, public funds?
No, it's all private donations. Okay. Most of the support, if not all of the support for a Rafiki village comes from donors here in the States.
Okay, wonderful.
So what other than donations, which we will definitely have links on our website or on with this episode to Rafiki. So if anybody did want to make a donation or check out
it's RafikiFoundation.org.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
And what else can people do?
Well, Rafiki? There's also, if you can go online to the Rafiki Exchange. Now, this you mentioned the Widows Program, which was a great program that was started a number of years ago. That what they do is they work with local widows who make various products, everything from baskets to various garments and shawls and different things from the various countries. And they make them there in Africa and make them available, send them here, send it here to the States so that people can go on the website to the Rafiki Exchange. There's also an actual store in Eustis where the home office is, and people can go and purchase goods that were made in the various villages by native widows.
Okay. Yeah. Is that, can they purchase those online as well, or is that just in Florida?
Yes, you can. You can purchase online. There's a store at the home office, and there's a store in a village or in a town not far from the home office. But I believe you can order online as well.
Okay.
And it's actually very helpful at the RafikiFoundation.org under the Our Work and Widows page. There is a page on the widows and how the products purchased and made. It's an infographic and how the money is used and how it gets from one place to another. It's actually very helpful, and it shows Africa and the various countries and towns that are being serviced through this. It's a very helpful website. There's a lot of good videos here as well, which, you know, that's what we need nowadays.
Yeah, I tell you, I've seen over the years as a pastor and working with a very mission-oriented denomination with the Southern Baptist, which I still think has the best support system for their missionaries, their foreign missionaries. But in terms of actual work and the partnership with missionaries from the States, partnering with natives, and the quality of care, Rafiki is—it's a cut above.
Excellent. Well, I know that teachers that they do internships, like short-term trips.
Yes, what they call short-term missions, and that can be anything from 3 weeks to 6 months. It depends on the individual. You have to, you know, they have training before. As a matter of fact, what I'm doing in, what I'm participating in July is called enrichment. And enrichment is preparation for short-term or sometimes long-term missionaries, as well as bringing in some of the field personnel, Rafiki overseas staff, to bring them home for to go over technical information as well as provide studies and devotionals for them. But that's done twice a year. And yeah, so if a person wanted to go into the mission field on a short term just to kind of see if this is something they'd be interested in, or just as a summer thing, yeah, there are short term mission trips available.
Okay, yeah, it's excellent. And I know the one last thing is they actually have a child sponsorship.
Yes. Yes, you can. Again, you can go to the homepage, and if you wanted to sponsor a child, what that does is rather than just blanket donations to the organization, you can sponsor a child in any given village and provide X amount of dollars for the and they would break it down for you how much it costs to care for a child for the course of a year. And you can choose a child that you would sponsor. And then there's correspondence available between you and the child in any given village.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask about that because I'm flipping through the website as we're chatting here, and under the get involved and that, or the ways to give, there's the overview, there's the date or donate, but then there's sponsor child, sponsor a missionary, support my missionary. And then, or you can support my mini missionary trip. But when you go into sponsor a child, there are pictures, names, ages,
yes,
of individuals, the general background, things that someone might have suffered, infections or diseases or illnesses or other matters that they've gone through or might come into contact with. It's quite amazing, the information you're getting here through this website for someone that you might want to support. This is pretty cool.
It's pretty thorough, the information that's there. And like you said, if you do sponsor a child, then you can correspond with them. There are pictures and so forth that are sent back and forth, and you get to kind of track their development and their growth and what's going on in school and what life is like in the village they live in.
Yeah, I remember growing up, you know, of course, when you're a kid and you're homesick from school, you got to watch, you know, Green Acres and the Van Dyke Show. And but in between that, there'd be these commercials, and it would be Sally Struthers, you know, out in,
yes,
mm-hmm, in Africa. And now they still have the same commercials. And so often, you know, you send your money to something like that, and you look at these children and these places in Africa usually, and your heart breaks.
But sure.
So often those are being funneled through something that you have no idea if it actually makes it to the right place. And you know, and a lot of times it's supporting organizations that do not have any kind of biblical foundation. But here's a way that you know exactly who's running it. You know the, mm-hmm, what you donate is going to actually get to the child or to the village or to the missionary. You know it's good, solid, reformed theology that's the foundation of what is being taught to these children. And there's widows and orphans that are being taken care of. It's just a wonderful organization.
Yeah, and well, two things. They have what they call, you know, the government GOs, you know, government or NGOs, non-government organizations, and which is some of these outside mission groups or outside United States based feeding programs or different things where they target a particular need in an area. The problem, in all fairness, the problem with them is that it is expensive, mm-hmm, to try to service a particular need, you know, from one country to another. So what happens is a lot of money gets lost within the bureaucracy.
Right.
So say for every $10 given, maybe seven has to go to support the organization, and three gets to the actual work. So they try to do what they can.
Right.
What makes Rafiki unique as a service organization, as an NGO, is the partnership that it has with the natives in each given country and the support system. That's why on the support page, you have ways that you can support the organization, you can support an individual child, or you can support a missionary, mm-hmm, whether it's long-term or a short-term mission. So all of the funds are very specific. Furthermore, the land, as I mentioned, is either donated by the tribe or the country. If not donated, very, very little. I think in Kenya, we pay, it's a 99-year lease for $1 a year or something like that. But all of the infrastructure for each Rafiki village is paid for by private donations. So we're not dependent. So all of that is taken care of. We're not dependent on money that goes specifically for the care of an orphan. It goes to the orphan because the money for the infrastructure of the village is already taken care of.
Hmm. Yeah.
And each of our overseas staff, they raise their own support.
Right.
Oh, they do? Yeah. Okay. So they're all the overseas staff. So they're overseas, meaning those that come from, say, America or Europe or something like that, come in and they raise their own support to do the work that they're doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's why for the support for either short-term or long-term missionaries that they solicit on the page, it goes to help support that person. I don't know how they do it now, but I know when I was on the board, before we would send a person into the field as a long-term or as an overseas staff, they had to raise, I believe, 2 or 3 years worth of living expenses before we would send them.
Okay. That way they were assured of being there for a few years.
Exactly.
That's a great way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great talking to you on everything, Rafiki, and of course, and White Horse Inn, Evangelical.
Everything White Horse Inn.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. It's been great talking to you. And at some point, we're going to do another one.
Absolutely.
On dispensationalism and Reformed theology and all that.
That tends to be a common topic here.
It is a common topic here. That's
well, I go to the Midwest on occasion. As a matter of fact, I used to go to Chicago to do a conference once a year, but now I'm going to Indiana. Usually it's in the end of the year. So, yeah, we'd love to do this again.
Yeah, it'd be great. Where in Indiana is it?
Indianapolis.
Okay.
New Life Community Church.
All right. What's the name of the conference? Yeah. We'll throw that out there too. Why not?
Mid-America Reformed Theology Conference, I believe.
Okay.
Pastor Andy Hunt. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time for being with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. You can find us at reformforum.org. Also, we are a listener-supported podcast through the Reform Forum. You can go to reformforum.org/donate to find out how you can keep this and other programs going. We do appreciate that support, and I know that Rafiki Foundation would as well. So check out www.rafikifoundation.org to find out more about that foundation, which we've heard a bit about now through Dr. Ken Jones. To find out more about the congregation that Rob and I serve, you can go to westminsteropc.org. Or if you're looking for a great church in Chicagoland, go to chicagoreformed.org. Next time, Rob, on Theology Simply Profound.
Well, next time we actually have another interview with Ryan McGraw from Greenville Seminary, teaches there.
All right. Well, thanks again for taking the time to be with us on Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.